Welcome to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. From handguns to rifles and hunting to self-defense, even a bit of politics. It's time to exercise your First and Second Amendment rights. Call and join the conversation, 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Dick Kupke.
Well, good morning and welcome back to Trigger Talk Radio in 2021, if you can believe it. Here we are. And actually, every time we flip the calendar to a new year, I'm sitting there thinking about things like, actually, it was January of 13. So this makes 8 years now that I've been doing the regular show. Can you believe that? We've been together. We have been Saturday buddies for 8 years, okay? And I looked back because you can actually go back on my website, TriggerTalkRadio.com, and there's across the top, there's a menu, and there's like the 2020. Actually, I got to add a new one for 2021 podcast for this year. But 2021 podcast, there'll be all the years prior, and it says 2016 and previous. So I went there and was looking, and the first show that was actually, it'll be next week, will be the exact anniversary or almost the exact anniversary, was January 12th of 13. And that was the first show that I did that was regular, every week show. And before that, now for like 9 months before that, I had been doing a monthly program, like 15 minutes once a month or so, 15 minutes or a half hour with Matt Clark. And I used to have those up there too. But you know what? Matt must have let his website go, because I'll tell you what, I clicked on it today, the link. I thought, oh, I'll look. It's got a list of previous podcasts with Matt Clark. And I pulled it up. And first of all, I had to translate it from Chinese into English. And then it was all just a bunch of gibberish anyway. I mean, it was like Chinese animation and stuff. And I thought, uh-oh. So I took those off today. So the first show up there will be the first regular show, which was January 12th, 2013. And that actually happened. I'll never forget that. We were doing a remote broadcast in December, I think it was. November, maybe, or December of 12. And we were doing a remote broadcast out at the firing line. And oh, not the firing line, I'm sorry, at Ann Arbor Arms here in Ann Arbor. And I walked out afterwards, and Linda and Theron were there, and they said, hey, we think you're ready for your own show. And I said, what? Yes. So that's when we decided that we would end up doing Trigger Talk Radio as a regular show. So I have enjoyed these past 8 years as we start out into our ninth year now. I hope we have many, many more, okay? So we'll run down through some of the format. And now back then, I think Matt was still doing it. Derek, were you here back then in 2013 and stuff?
Yeah, I was here.
Okay. I'm just trying to remember. I think you know what? I can remember. You had like an old Ranger, and you would bring the stuff for the remotes and stuff to the remotes out there, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yep. And when we did the Wham Fest out there, we did that too out in Whitmore Lake. That was a lot of fun. And I remember you bringing stuff out for that. So I asked Derek a little earlier. I said, hey, are you in a football coma from watching all the games? Because I watched all the games yesterday. I actually, kind of in between, I was installing a reverse osmosis water system in the house. But then I finally sat down and watched them, and I got a kick, and Derek and I were laughing about this, that there are so many second-tier bowl games, okay? And so I'm sitting there, and I'm looking up. I'm trying to think, oh, what's on TV today that I can watch? And, of course, there was, you know, the Alabama game and the Auburn-Northwestern game and then Ohio State-Clemson. But I was looking at the other ones, and I said, what is this? And it was the Duke's Mayonnaise Bowl. And what did you say, Derek? You thought it was a joke?
Yeah, I thought it was some kind of practical joke, but then all of a sudden I saw the final score that Wisconsin had beaten Duke in the game, and then in the post-game celebration in the locker room, one of the Wisconsin players was dancing around with the trophy, and he dropped it on the floor, and they had to get a bottle of Duke's mayo to put it on the base of the trophy, but that's just temporary. I'm sure the trophy company that made the trophy, I'm sure they've got insurance that they can replace it, because they can't keep that bottle of mayo in their trophy case, because eventually that's going to start emitting an odor.
Well, do you know, and I looked up, and I didn't know. I mean, I've always been either one of two things. I've either been a Miracle Blend guy or a Hellman's guy when it comes to mayonnaise. But I looked it up, Duke's mayonnaise, and it says, it's got a saying that goes, it's in the twang. Apparently, they use a higher percentage of egg yolk and some paprika and some other things. And it's a really big deal in the South. I didn't know that. So you learn something new every day.
Yep.
So at any rate, there were some surprises yesterday. I thought Northwestern did really well against Auburn.
Yeah, I was certainly surprised to see Northwestern defeated Auburn by 16 points. Even though Auburn was without two of their best wide receivers, I still think that Auburn had a much more talented team than Northwestern, but Northwestern certainly proved me wrong in this game. They hung tough. It looked like that Auburn was going to take control of the game, but Northwestern pulled away and gave a huge win for the Big Ten.
You know, I remember back in, actually, Northwestern won the Big Ten in like 1969 or something like that. And they had a coach, because when I was pledging the fraternity at Purdue, we had pledge boards. We had to get signed by people. And the coach at Purdue at that time was Alex Agassi, who actually had been the coach at Northwestern and had had a very successful career there. So interesting stuff about football. But that's not why you listen. You didn't tune in. You go, what is this, football talk? No, this is Trigger Talk. So we'll talk about guns a little bit. Let's see. First of all, somebody is actually brave enough to have a gun show today. I hope it's taking place. It did not show it was canceled. It's the original gun and knife show in Lansing, Mason, in Ingham, at the Ingham County Fairgrounds. And that is actually a outstanding gun show. It's off of I think Kip Road or something like that. You have to get off of 27. The last time I went to that was a few years ago with Theron. Theron and I, and actually it was a day much like today. It was icy, and I picked up Theron, and we drove up there together, and we bought all sorts of cool stuff. That's where I met the guys from the Rip Grip Company and stuff like that. So hopefully it's taking place. They didn't wimp out to the governor and her dictatorial rulings here. Now, there's only one in Ohio this week, which is unusual, the Westland Mall Gun Show at Westland. And there are, let's see, Missouri's got two, the Springdale Gun Knife Show at Northwest Arkansas Convention Center in Springdale, Arkansas, and the RK St. Charles Gun Show at the St. Charles Convention Center in St. Joe's, and or St. Charles. And New York has none this week. So of interest, there's some interesting things came. I did check. I kind of thought, well, it's only the second. I bet they won't have the CPL numbers up this early. And they don't. It's still at 693,247. However, they did sneak in the last week or so, they snuck in the CPL report, the yearly one. So this is the Concealed Pistol Licensing Annual Report from October 1st of 2019 through September 30th of 2020. So I've been waiting for this one because it's pretty interesting. And I always talk about it on here. I am going to post it on my website so that you can click and download the PDF. That's TriggerTalkRadio.com. And you can send me an email. I'll send you the link if you have difficulty finding it. It's dick@triggertalkradio.com. And I get lots of emails from people. And I try to answer most of them. I got some this week on ammo and first guns and stuff like that. So it was kind of fun. I enjoyed that. And if I haven't answered you yet, I will this week. But so here we've got the Michigan State Criminal Justice Information Center. And what they've done is they have general information first. So in Michigan, we had 182,721 people apply for CPLs this year, okay, or last year, up through September. And so that is actually, you know, a good third of the numbers that we've got out there. That's pretty good. Okay, actually, it's more than that, slightly. No, it's not. About a third of the people. So the numbers are continuing to grow. And again, they're still holding up. They say license issued were 159,000 and 24,333 are pending. Okay, so that leaves a difference of some of the ones that they're denied. And it's interesting to see why they deny applications. You know, the one thing I didn't notice yet, I don't see that the failure to wear a mask as a reason to be denied for your CPL. But at any rate, that they've got a list of everything up there. And it's fun to read them because it's also fun to look at some of the numbers of why they were disqualified, why they were suspended, and why they were revoked. Okay. And in reality, there's some trends there. But the overall numbers of people that are that they were suspended or revoked for were such a small percentage of the holders. I want to say it works out to be about 0.55%. Okay, not 55%, not 5.5%. It was actually 0.55%. 3,815 people had their licenses suspended or revoked. We'll go through some of the reasons, and they make a lot of sense, okay? And actually, of interest was that the majority of them, out of 3,800 people, about 3,000 of them were for felony or misdemeanor convictions, okay? So it's people who have done some things, but that's still a small percentage compared to the population in general. Okay, if you look to see the percentage of people that of the general population that commit crimes, it's a much larger percentage, and that's the reason that we always say that CPL holders and gun owners in general are legal gun owners are a far more law-abiding group than the population in general. So here's the out of the 2,300 that were disqualified, these are people that never even made it to getting one. The biggest number was misdemeanor conviction or charges pending. Okay. And the second one was felony conviction or charges pending. So I want to say that's, you know, like almost 2,000 out of the 2,300 had serious crimes against them. Other ones were things like did not submit the appropriate pistol safety training course certificate, 55 of them. Well, come on, people. If you took the course, you have to turn in the paperwork, okay? 35 people had a mental health disorder. 36 people were subject to a protection order, injunctive conditional bond order. I want to say, let's see, 29 people had other mental history issues, and incomplete application was number 24. Unlawful user of or addicted to a controlled substance, 15, and failed to reinstate a background check. So I'm not sure what they did on that one. The license suspended, the largest number were misdemeanor or felony charges pending. Okay, so this is somebody who already had one, and then they came up with a misdemeanor or a felony charge, and it's still pending. Okay, that doesn't mean it'll be revoked, but it may. A very small number five people carrying with are under the influence of 0.02 to 0.8, and four people under the influence of 0.8 to 0.1, and two people refused to submit a chemical analysis. And then there were 759 people who were subject to a personal protection order. So these are maybe domestic situations and things like that. But very few people had it suspended from, like, carrying under the influence. License revoked permanently. They were nine people for carrying of a alcohol or controlled substance with a blood alcohol content of 0.1 or higher, 76 people for mental issues, 1,400 for felony and misdemeanor charges. Let's see, out of the, number of civil infractions were 16. So the number of concealed pistol license holders convicted of a crime were 1,300. So it's a very small number. The number of suicides from CPL holders in Michigan was 184. Okay. Let's see. The mean amount of time for an FBI clearance was 2.6 hours, but the median amount of time for an FBI clearance on a background check was 3 minutes. And the shortest amount of time for FBI clearance was 1 minute. And the longest amount of time for FBI clearance was 32 days. That probably is somebody like somebody named, Joe Smith. And there's 50,000 Joe Smiths that they got to work their way through. The total number of times the database was accessed was 2,866,624. Wow. Well, why is that? Okay. The individual possesses a threat to himself or others, including a peace officer, 35,000. So that's people maybe making traffic stops or a gun where there were shots fired and they were checking to see if somebody had a permit, things like that. 10,000 times the individual had committed an unlawful offense with a pistol. So that's somebody, this is not a CPL holder. This is somebody who did something with a pistol, and they were checking the database to see if they were carrying or legal, like a CPL. The pistol had been used during the commission of an unlawful offense. 18,000. Okay, this is holding up the liquor store, carjacking. They're checking the database to see if the person is a CPL holder. And by the way, we already talked about the fact that very, very few times is the person who actually is committing a crime, are they actually a CPL holder? And then, to ensure the safety of a police officer, 1,820,888. Wow, that sounds like a lot. That is traffic stops, folks. That is when the officers pull you over, and they check the database to see, they look at the license on the car. Now, for 29 years that I was management of Ford, that would just come back. If they ever stopped me, it would come back and say, oh, this car is registered to Ford Motor Company, and it wouldn't tell them anything. But now that I'm average Joe again, so if I get stopped and the police check the license plate, they'll see that I have a CPL. And then what they'll do is they'll approach you slightly different. Actually, they probably will approach you more confidently because they know as a CPL holder, if you are carrying a gun, then you're a good guy with a gun and it's not going to be a problem. And I've even had officers say that to me, thank you for carrying. But that is one of the reasons that if you are carrying, you want to make sure that you tell the officer. I think it's a common courtesy if you're carrying a firearm. Actually, I've only had this happen. I mean, it's not like I'm a scofflaw of automotive safety or something like that. But there's times when I have gotten stopped, I want to say two or three times in the past 10 years probably, where I'm going 7 miles an hour over the speed limit, or I'm going you know, I one time I missed a no right turn on red sign and made a right turn on red. Heaven forbid. Okay. But the officer stopped me, and I wasn't carrying him. When he came up, I said, I had my CPL in my hand and my license in my hand, my license at 10 and 2 on the steering wheel. And I had the light on, the dome light on, so he could see what was going on in the car. And I said, "Officer, I want to tell you I'm a CPL holder, but I am not carrying." And that just sets the tone, okay? Let's see. The actual revenue, by the way, that the state made to allow us to exercise our right to keep and bear arms was $11,204,000. So how about that? And that was last year, but the five-year average was $8.8 million. So clearly the numbers are growing and growing and growing. It's interesting to take a look at the information. There's all sorts of things about the kind of criminal convictions that caused people to be revoked and stuff. It doesn't make for good radio for me to read all this stuff, but you might enjoy reading it. So I will put that up on the website for you guys to all look at. Let's see. Oh gosh, this is Alyssa Milano, our favorite activist, anti-gun leftist out there. It's interesting because she was out there making provocative statements again, but she was out talking about anti-maskers. And she goes, "The anti-maskers are the same people who think you need an AR-15 for protection." Okay. And then she yelled out louder for the people in the back, "A mask will protect you more than an AR-15 will." And that's what she stated on December 29th. Now, in reality, Alyssa, those are two totally different kind of threats. Like, I would not expect an AR-15 strapped to my face to protect me from inhaling any coronavirus. And I would not expect a mask to protect me if somebody was breaking in my home. So just idiotic. Even the media said, what is she saying? It's two kinds of different things. I don't understand it. Oh, well. Let's see. This was an interesting story. Made me laugh. A felon was caught with a gun. That happens a lot, okay, especially over in Chicago and stuff like that. But he stated, this was in Houston Town, Texas, I guess. Austin Town or Houston Town, I'll have to look. But the felon was caught with a license, and he goes, "Hey, I need it to protect myself for self-defense." The guy's name is Kadeem Gilmore. And so he was caught in Austin Town the day after Christmas, and he told police that he needed it because he's been shot 15 times. So he needed to carry a gun for self-defense. And I guess the question I'd like to know is, what the heck are you doing that you got shot 15 times, Kadeem? Well, apparently, he's involved in some other illicit activities. He only had one felony drug conviction back in 2007. That's the reason he can't legally have a gun. However, you got to say, what have you been up to? If you've been shot 15 times and you need a gun for protection, then you're in the wrong line of business there, sir. Along with... this is something where there was an Oklahoma sheriff that actually was out suggesting this week, as Sheriff Terry Park is his name, of Choctaw County, suggesting that in southeast Oklahoma, there seems to be an increase in homicides in home invasions and stuff. And so he's encouraging all of his constituents to exercise their Second Amendment. Get a firearm, know how to use it. Be aware of your surroundings, put up surveillance cameras and extra lighting, but most of all, get a firearm and know how to use it. Isn't that refreshing from a law enforcement officer? I've got to say, now I'm sure that of course in Oklahoma, there's probably not too many liberal newspapers. So, but they're probably out there going, yeah. But you would think that, you would hear more of that. And we've heard it in Wisconsin, we've heard it in other states, especially southern states. We'll talk more about that when we get back. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600 in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Happy New Year.
Wham Talk 1600. Welcome back to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. Call now, 734-822-1600 to join in the conversation.
And we're back. And we were just talking about in Oklahoma, where they sheriff was encouraging folks to utilize their Second Amendment rights to protect themselves from all the crime. And by the way, there's some, I got a story in here somewhere that talks about the crime is going up in Seattle and Portland. Can you believe? Now, I can't understand why they just decided to fund their police. And I thought they were going to send social workers in there to calm the masses. But here's another example of a place where they think gun control is an outstanding way to prevent crime, and that would be Chicago. Okay. Which is now Murder City, USA. And they had 4,174 people shot in 2020. 4,000, yeah. And 3,455 of them were maimed, okay? And 792 of them were killed, okay? Now, do you want to know something? When you take a look at it, with 792 homicides. Now, by the way, they still blame all of their shootings and stuff on Indiana and other surrounding states and their lax gun laws, despite the fact that the other surrounding states don't seem to have that same problem, okay? Now, in reality, in Chicago, with Mayor Lori Lightfoot out there and her citywide shooting gallery, this was 792 homicides. The city of Chicago has more murders than 46 entire states. Now, did you hear me correctly? The city of Chicago has more murders than 46 entire states. And you can't go blaming that on other states around them and their lax gun laws. Okay, this is ridiculous. You should see the map, and they actually break them out into single homicides, double homicides, triple plus homicides. It's just and there's a couple of dots when I look at it. Let me see, 1, 2, 3 dots of self-defense. Out of all of those homicides and shootings and stuff, 3 of them were self-defense. That's very interesting here. We've got Mark from Waterloo Township on the phone with a question about a gun transfer. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. What's your question?
Oh, okay. I know for handguns, if you want to transfer their ownership to someone else, you have to go through a federal firearms license. My stepdaughter lives in Ypsilanti, and I was thinking of giving her a shotgun. Do you have to do a legal transfer of long guns, shotguns, stuff like that, if you want to give it to someone?
No, you don't. And actually, even what you just said about handguns is not quite true, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What you have to do is, let's say, if I am deciding to sell a gun, and I want to sell it to somebody, a handgun, and I want to sell it to somebody that has a CPL permit, then we just get a little 3 triplicate carbonless form from, you can pick it up from the local, like for Waterloo, probably, I don't know, that would, whoever your police force is out there, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Like for me, it's Washtenaw County Sheriff here. And you pick that up. Now, you also can go on the website. You know, this is a good, let me write this down, because if I'm going to put down that CPL report, I am also going to put down on my website, I'll also put down the link again. That's a very popular one. The there is a link to the pistol transfer PDF that you can download yourself. And so what happens is that when you sell it to somebody, like if I sell it to, do you have a CPL, Mark?
No, sir, I do not. I hope to get one someday.
Okay, but let's say you did have one. Then all I would do is, if I sold you that pistol, is I would see your CPL license, I would fill out that transfer form, and I would list your CPL on it, your CPL number on it. That then shows me that we assume that the state of Michigan has properly vetted you and that you're an okay person to have a pistol. Okay. Mm-hmm. The other thing is if you don't have one, you can still go get a permit to purchase from the like the Washtenaw County Sheriff or something like that. And then I can still transfer that to you. Now the long guns do not need any transfer paperwork whatsoever. If you want to give her a shotgun, sell her a shotgun, gift it, whatever, there is no paperwork involved in a long gun at all.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Okay. One other quick question, if you will.
Yeah.
Do you know of any CPL courses around the Ann Arbor area? Because I can't find any out in the area that I live in Jackson County.
You absolutely can. As a matter of fact, I just heard them out there the other day, on last Sunday. Tri-County Sportsman's League in Saline is offering them.
Okay.
That's tcsl.org. They're quite popular, and twice a month they have them. A guy named Brian Craig is our training coordinator. He does an outstanding job, and he's also teaching at a couple other places. You could get a CPL through. Now, you're out in Waterloo?
Yes, sir.
I think Dexter, Chelsea Rod and Gun, and Dexter, there's two clubs out there that do them. Also, Ann Arbor Arms out there on Meddy Road, which is just off of Jackson Road by Baker Road.
I pass it many times a week.
Yeah, they have all sorts of courses out there. So,
okay.
And it's about the same now. And actually, Ann Arbor Arms has a indoor range, which is very nice when it's 30 degrees outside. Some of the other ones, they're outdoor ranges. But like at Tri-County Sportsman's League, we just the other day, we encased it all with Visqueen and stuff. So it's kind of like semi-indoor, you know?
Gotcha. All right, thank you.
You bet, Mark. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Let's see. New York City Office of Gun Violence Prevention, 2020 surge in shootings and murders is due to racism. Did you know that? Oh, all us bad white guys out there, and it's all due to us. It's a surge in racism is causing the shootings and murders in New York City. I don't think so. Okay, I'm just saying. Let's see. Here's an interesting question. We got John from Danville on the phone with a gun-related gift he got for Christmas. Hi, John. How are you?
Morning, Dick. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, John. So what's new? What'd you get for Christmas?
I tried to call last week, and just as I was dialing my phone, I was on my way to see my kids. The phone went dead, so I couldn't call. But no, my wife got me an M1 rifle for Christmas.
A grand?
A grand, yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, man. Well, that is outstanding. I have a grand. I actually happen to have gotten it from a guy you know very well.
Yep.
But so that is really cool. What kind is it? What brand? What year?
It is a Springfield Armory, and the serial number is 4,297,000 and some. So it's post-World War II. Manufacturer.
Okay.
Very nice shape. It was out of a collection. So, yeah, I'm real happy with it. You know, you were talking about concealment and carry earlier in the show about concealed carry. I'm thinking, you know, living here in Illinois, I might need to try to find a holster for my M1 Garand. You know, so.
Well, don't go up, although I happen to know you go, well, do you go up to Chicago much anymore?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, yeah.
Well, the Garand, gosh, for everybody who is our age, and I know that we are exactly the same age, that it is something that, I mean, we grew up watching that on Combat, on, you know, all the war movies and all that kind of stuff. Many of our other listeners here, actually, I have listeners that are vets who probably carried them, and then also carried a variant like an M14 during Vietnam and stuff like that. So, so have you shot it yet?
No, I haven't. Actually, the gun came with 6 bandoliers of ammo, M2 ball and clips. And okay. I have not fired it yet. I was going to ask you, and I thought that maybe you'd know the answer to this, about trying to fire commercially available hunting ammo out of it. And what I've been able to learn so far is that the commercially available hunting ammo tends to be a little bit hotter, as a rule, than military ball.
It does. And, it
typically
does,
bigger bullets.
I want to say a couple of things. First of all, they used a powder back then that was like a, I think it was like a cylindrical powder or something. And actually, a lot of people, I don't know which powder most closely replicates it. That's a good question for me to look up. M1 Garand recipe.
However, there is a company, I'm sorry, there's a company named Schuster that makes an adjustable gas plug for the gun, where you just take out the gas plug out of the end of the gas tube there and stick this right one in, and it's ported. And you can just start with your largest port and, you know, basically crank it down until the gun starts to cycle, and then maybe just a tad bit more, you know, so you can adjust the gas system, prevent it from overloading it, you know.
You know, the issue is that that the powders are different and also the loads are different. People, I want to say most of the M2 ball is either 147 or 150 grain, right?
Right, yeah.
And so full metal jacket, 150 grain rounds, and it, I think it's something like 2,700 feet per second, something like that, 2,650.
Right.
20, and the thing is that today, people, if you go buy hunting ammo, you might find 175 grain or 180 grain typical 30 caliber ammo in 30-06, okay? And I know that I have some commercial ammo in both 150 and 180 grain that I use on a, I have a 30-06 that's a Remington 760 pump, you know, so the, that can take anything. But the thing is that with those heavier bullets, you can end up getting a, you know, a higher pressure and stuff, and you can end up actually bending the op rod, the operating rod on it.
And yeah, so, you would need to make allowances somehow, you know. And what I've been able to learn is you probably would be okay for a few times, but you don't want to make a practice of it. And, you know, you have to allow for the fact that burn rates are different, heavier bullets, things of that nature, you know. So,
right. And now you still can find, although I want to say I have not seen it as much at gun shows. Of course, none this past year because there haven't been any gun shows. There's one on, I should look up Illinois gun shows for you. There is a gun show in Lansing, Mason today. And if anybody would have it, they would have it because they have a good group of vendors there. But there for a while, you could go to a gun show and guys would have pallets of Korean surplus M1 Garand ammo.
Uh-huh.
And by the way, it's already 70 years old, so another 10 doesn't make that much difference. You still have to look to make sure it was stored correctly and that it doesn't have, like, bad corrosion or cracking and things like that. Now,
Right.
So there's still some surplus out there, but there is a new commercial alternative. American Eagle, which I think is a federal brand.
It's
federal value brand. They actually make an ammo that the box says 4 M1 Garand on it, and they've loaded it to replicate the original military ball ammo.
Sure. Yeah, well, that would obviously be the thing to use, you know.
Well, yeah, if you're going to buy new ammo, now, of course, I know you hand load, and so you'll probably come up with a good recipe to replicate it anyway, won't you?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I thought I'd get one of these gas plugs I was telling you about. I do have an AR-10 Stoner pattern rifle made by Lewis Machine and Tool, and right. I have an adjustable gas key on that gun just for the same thing. When you put a suppressor on the rifle, you know, it ups the gas pressure so that you can tune the gun and not, you know, batter it in any way. Yeah. So I thought I would probably try to invest in something like this before I get too carried away with it, other than to fire the ball ammo or this new stuff you're talking about from American Eagle.
Yeah. You know what? You ought to have a... Now, you've got a AR-10 that's got a suppressor on it, right?
Well, it's a Stoner pattern rifle. It's like an SR-25. It's made by Lewis Machine and Tool. Yeah.
But it's threaded for a suppressor, and you got a 30 cal suppressor for
it? Right. Well, I have to elaborate on that a little bit. My son lives in Indiana, and he's got a gun trust, and our suppressors are on that gun trust. So right. I don't have the suppressor handy with me. I've gone to some tactical rifle matches, sniper matches, and that kind of thing, and I generally go get the suppressor from him when I use it. So
I was just thinking, boy, there would be something. Of course, I'm sure there's probably Springfield Armory's probably making M1As with threaded barrels on it, you know. But I bet there'd be nothing cooler than a suppressed Garand. Do you know why? Because then you could hear the Garand ping even clearer.
Yeah, I don't know. You'd have to tap the muzzle somehow, I guess, on the Garand, you know.
Yeah.
The Springfield Armory, you just take the flash hider off and it's threaded, you know.
Right.
That actually takes some doing, you know. You have to use a wrench to do it and that kind of thing. And of course, you lose your front sight, but, you know, anytime you would use a suppressor, I suppose you'd use a scope.
Yeah. Pretty cool, John. Well, I think that is outstanding. You know, and you know what? I was going back on my, if you heard earlier, I was talking about my earlier shows from back in 2012 and 13. And
right.
In 2013, there's some pictures of some rifles and handguns that you did. You've been a longtime listener here, and you had sent me some pictures of a camouflage 308 or something.
Oh, it'd be like a bolt action?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one. This was a Remington 700 that I got off of it. Somebody's idea of an M40 tactical rifle. Then my wife did that camo job on it, just with paint from where she works. She works at Menards, and she just got some camouflage paint and did that with leaves and twigs and whatnot. Yeah.
So I was going to say, go back to the 2016 and earlier podcasts on my website and scroll all the way down to the bottom, and you'll see some guns you recognize.
Oh yeah, okay, I'll do that.
Thanks for calling today, John. Happy New Year to
you. All right. You too, Dick. Yep. Bye now.
See you later. Yeah, John's a longtime listener, and he comes up with, he has got, like, I got to be quiet here because I don't want my wife to, you know, get jealous that I'm talking about his wife like this, but she is just a gun nut. She buys guns. He goes, oh, yeah, she just got one of those new Ruger PCE chargers in 9mm, you know, and every time I talk to him, he's like, oh, yeah, she just got this. She just got that. I'm going, holy cow. Some of us have wives that are tolerant, and she is absolutely a peach in that she is a gun lover, Second Amendment supporter. She went to training with John down at, I think it's called Advanced Tactical Specialist or something, down in Ohio, some training, a lot of fun there. So anyway, speaking of, we were talking to ARs a little bit and stuff. I had an article I was looking at, and it's very interesting that a lot of people don't necessarily know why there's a little thing on the right side of an AR that you push in. It's spring loaded. It's got little teeth on your bolt. Okay. Now, by the way, when Eugene Stoner first designed the AR-15, it did not have that. It's called a forward assist. Okay. And it's a holdover feature from I want to say all the earlier guns that the military was using that were semi-automatic, like an M1 Garand, an M1 Carbine, the M14, they all had bolt levers that stuck out that you were able to force the firearm, the bolt forward, back into battery position. And now, for those of us that just shoot in clean conditions and stuff like that, not under combat conditions, not in out where there's a lot of sand, like Afghanistan, with that really fine white sand that can get into everything. Well, when we shoot at the range, our guns are usually cleaned and lubed wonderfully, okay? But if you are shooting in the jungle, in the desert, and stuff like that, you can have a case where, and if you're shooting a lot and you're using ammo that is dirty, it can gum up the bolt and be hard to go forward. And because there was no lever on an AR-15, you could get in a situation where that bolt would not go all the way forward, and then the locking lugs have to rotate and lock the bolt in. And so the Army, actually, at the behest of the Army, the AR-15 forward assist was added to the rifle because the Army actually felt that they needed it. Okay. Now, the Air Force didn't believe it was necessary on the original design, but Colt created the first forward assist assembly, and after that, they all ended up with it. Now, sometimes I see some modern ones that don't have them. Some of the value ones don't have them. But for the most part, and actually, I know that there's the dust cover that is that little spring-loaded cover that pops open when the bolt goes forward. That's meant to try to keep some of that dirt out of there. Now, my 50 Beowulf doesn't have that cover. I think they think you're not going to be out there where you're going to be getting stuff in it. But I want to say the forward assist is an interesting addition and an evolution to the original AR-15 that Eugene Stoner developed. And the Army just kind of felt like, hey, we need to have this just in case, because they did not want to have guys who had dirty rifles that then they would get in a battle and they would not be able to get the bolt back into battery and continue the fight. So at any rate, that's kind of interesting. A little bit of history there and trivia. Take a look. How many of you, as a matter of fact, I remember I had a neighbor one time who picked up an AR-15, and he said, geez, can you show me how to work this thing? Because a lot of people, you know, we just think it's intuitive. A gun person, an experienced gun person will often, you know, just pick it up, know exactly what everything is on a gun. But think of it's like the first time maybe you're not real good with computers and you picked it up and you go, what is this? What do they mean? Control, Alt, Delete, or click the mouse. What do you mean? And right click it. What do you mean by that? Well, just think of all those 7.7 million new gun owners out there who just bought their first firearm, and they're not really sure. And I want to say, it's tough, too, because some of the ranges are having, you know, special procedures because of COVID-19. Maybe some of their classes were canceled. I would suggest that you take a class at one of those clubs around here, an introductory firearm class, matter of fact, they have introductory carbine classes for all these people that are buying the AR-15s. So you learn about things like gas blocks and forward assist, devices and stuff like that. It's kind of, you took driver's ed and you learned how to drive, unless you grew up on a farm, but that's how you learned how to drive, right? Well, now you take a class. Anyway, good talking to you. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio at WAM Talk 1600 in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Have a happy new year. I'll see you next week.